You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we'll be bringing you news, views, and stuff you can use. We have Dan Cole in for Rob Linton today. Rob is off one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. I'm not quite sure what's going on.
Yeah, but I thought I saw a big car chase heading towards the west.
Exactly.
So I'm not. We're hoping he gets away from them. Good luck on that, Rob. We'll see you soon, I'm sure. But we've got lots and lots of fascinating things to talk about this week. Steve is going to bring us a long and detailed report about.
Were you going to say a B word?
No, you mean boring? No, not me. A long and detailed report about the stuff that went on at Macworld this week.
Apparently it's getting very, very cold at a very normally hot place.
Yeah, exactly. When what freezes over?
Yeah.
Okay. Snowball fights in Hades. Before we do anything, I want to bring to your attention one interesting thing. We get calls and letters all the time. Where can I go to learn about computers? Now, we've talked a lot about a lot of the suburban high schools have evening adult classes.
Yes.
But now the Rochester City School District will also be having adult classes. Most of them will be taught at East High School. The prices range from $25 up to $100. There's a registration form available. You can call 262-8946 or go to rcsdk12.org, and Steve will have that.
What type of courses are they going to be handling?
They're doing PowerPoint, Word, Excel, exploring the internet, keyboarding, and this one's going to sell huge, eBay Your Way.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's a company now.
Actually, everyone names the seminar that. Setter did a seminar a couple of months ago, eBay Your Way, because it just, the alliteration isn't wonderful, so everyone calls it the same thing.
Well, right.
One of the hot things that's going on right now, though, is a lot of companies are starting up where you can drop your stuff off.
Yes.
And they'll sell it for you on eBay.
Right, and take a piece of the action,
yeah,
and
you
everybody
don't have
wins.
To take care of, you know, setting up the account and photographing and doing all that stuff if you don't want to.
Yep, I know a number of people who are making a fairly decent amount of money. It's more than mad money, you know, more than pocket change. Well, but not a full time job.
Yep. The joke is you go to garage sales in the summer, you buy something for a quarter, put it on eBay, and sell it for a dollar.
Yeah,
you know, that's what, a 300% profit.
Exactly, not bad work if you can get it. So
yeah.
Check that out. Steve's got that up on the website right now,
and
for those of you who are
for a less formal instruction, we should also mention the users groups.
We always should mention the users groups. It's not formal. Sit down in front of a computer and get led through it, but the user groups are tremendous. We have a number of them in town. You can find a list at techny.com.
Matter of fact, I gotta say thank you again to the folks. They had me out this past Thursday to the genealogy group, and had a great time as always out there, just talking with the folks, answering questions, and as usual, even when the three of us go out, you know, the time goes by so fast.
Well, and that's the problem. There's always so much they want to talk about, so much they want to know, and it's great. We're delighted that people are taking that interest. But I'm thrilled to see that the Rochester City School District has opened up an adult education program.
It's just down the street from me, actually.
Right, East High School. Right. It's a pretty neat deal. So check that out. And
happens to be where cider meets. So
and that's where cider meets.
Yeah, the Apple Cider User Group, second Wednesday of the month.
Second Wednesday of every month, the cider group, the PC group. There's local groups, Lugor. There's special interest groups. We do Windows. There's groups for various specific products. And like I said, you can see all those. Steve will put that up as well. He can put up the direct link, but if you go to techny.com and click on the user group button, that should be pretty obvious. It'll take you to the list of local user groups. Actually, there's three. They cover all of the areas we cover: Buffalo, Syracuse, and Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
Just click on your particular area, and you'll see a list of those user groups. If they have their own website, that's listed. But there's a bunch of neat stuff, so check it out. One of the good things about user groups that we always like to say is when you go to a user group, you'll see a huge spectrum of people. There are the geeks and the gurus who know everything there is to know about their subject. And then there are the people just like you who don't know doodly and are there to learn. and it's everybody in between, and the and everybody's nice to everybody else. They're polite, they're friendly, because they know you're there to learn. You know you're there to join. And none of the prices are dues are very expensive. It's a few bucks a year, and it's well worth it to get the newsletters. I get both the monitor from the PC group, and I get the from the Rochester Computer Society, and I get
Cider Press.
Yep. From Apple just, Cider.
At Apple Cider, let me switch hats a second as on the board of directors of Apple Cider. Right. We just raised our dues for 2006. We're up to $30 a year, which isn't that much. But we were looking back through our history. The last time we raised our dues was in 1991.
Yeah.
So we haven't raised our dues in 15 years.
Yeah,
it's about time. And, of course, we have sitting here past presidents of every user group.
Yeah, Dave, you got to run for Cider so we can all be past presidents of Cider, and I'll run for PC Cube.
So we'll all have been past presidents of PC Cube. Exactly right. I'm past president of both.
Yep.
And you're past president of Cider, and you're past president of PC Cube. Well, I was actually past president of Frog before they merged with PC Cube to form the Rochester Computer Society.
Yep.
I'm all about them. I love those. The Linux Users Group of Rochester meets at RIT, and we even host their website. And I've never been to a meeting. I've just the problem. I have this life.
Well, there's so many hours in the day. You know, I mean.
And Thursday nights I teach. So I teach from 6 to 10, and then Thursdays from 7 to 9. So.
Let's all join Bugger.
Yeah, exactly.
The B users group.
B users group of the greater environs of Rochester. That's one of those things where somebody said, the greater entirety of Rochester. It's where somebody came up with the acronym and then tried to find words that fit it. It's like ACORN, the All Computers of Rochester, New York. It's Rochester, N. It should be ACORNY, shouldn't it? To get New York in there?
Well, somebody might come up with some other adjectives.
Yeah, I don't think we want to go there. That's exactly right. But there's a lot of them out there, And I want to just, before we move on, I just want to quickly say, offer my thanks. If you look through this list, you'll see the people who are in charge, you know, the people with whom you make contact and the people who run it. Marty Bechtel and Jerry Seward and Bill Gunn, there's a million of them here. And I just want to say thanks to every one of them. They're doing great work in the community, and they deserve kudos for everything that they do. I think that's an important
thing.
Keeping
the community informed.
Yep, exactly. All right, let's go to the phones. Why not? Sound like a good idea to you? Sounds like a good idea to Dan. Let's go to the phones. We'll talk to Ed from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Hey, good morning, gang. Good show.
Thank you.
Say, I've got an issue with Windows.
You and me both.
We all do.
Well, yeah, I know. It's XP Home 2, and it runs all the time on a battery backup system, but I shut it down at least once a week. And when I shut it down, there's a program that won't close. It's called Card Reader Lookup Window, and I can find no reference to that anywhere in my system. So I don't know what's running it.
Do you have a memory card reader, like a camera memory card reader? That's what it sounds like it's for, but it could be one of those fake programs masquerading as something real.
Well, or it could be if you've got one of those little goobers that reads a business card and turns it into a database.
A business card.
Yeah. Do you have like a 6-in-1 card reader on your computer?
I don't believe so. There's a lot of stuff on there.
All right, here's what you're looking
is
for.
Is it built in? You might have it built into the system.
Yeah, in other words, it looks like it's got, if you were to look at, say, 5 1/4 bay, and I've even seen them for 3.5s now, and it looks like it's got like 4 different various size slots on it.
Oh, no, I don't have anything like that.
Okay.
No.
So no go there.
I can't associate it with anything that I see that's on the computer.
Now, have you checked in MS Config, though?
I'm sorry?
In MS Config, have you checked in there in the startup tab?
Yes, and there's nothing that I can really... I mean, there are a lot of things running, but there's nothing that I can relate to card reader.
That's one of the big problems with Windows, is that the name of the program often has very little bearing on the file name of the application.
Exactly.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's so true.
Now, before I started to get this... I did download the OpenOffice, And I've been doing some stuff with that just to check it out because I've been listening to you on your show, and I used it actually years ago. But
yep.
But I was wondering if it might have something to do with that.
No, because no. I run that, and it has no problems. Have you run the Security Tango?
Oh, yeah, yeah, regularly.
Yeah, then it's clearly some device on your system. As to why it won't shut down, well, it's probably a badly written piece of code. There may be an update for it, but without knowing exactly what's on your system, we can't tell you what it might be.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm running into an issue right now where I've got two, matter of fact, it's two of the dual-core machines on a my one client. The darn machines, they were shutting down fine when I had them at the shop. Now, we took it over, and I think it's another one of these. We did the file and data transfer for XP, where, you know, it moves all the file settings and all that from one machine to the other. Now, when we go to the machine and tell it to shut down, it starts to shut down. Screen goes black for about 3-4 seconds, and then the machine restarts.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get the darn thing to shut down.
Well, the solution is obvious. Don't shut down.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, you do. It's Windows, so at least once
it'll
a week
crash
you need to
once
reboot.
In a while,
yeah,
but...
right.
Yeah, I think it's all again because I found some issues though with that file transfer and settings that it has messed up on some machines. The way you network or map a drive, it was working fine before, but you do this file settings on a new machine.
Try Googling the exact name of the process that it shows.
I
and
did that. It did.
That might
Nobody
help.
Seems to know what it is.
It's probably too generic a term.
Right.
The other thing is, if you can email us an exact list of all the stuff in your machine, that might help. The hardware in particular. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Dan and me, Nick, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Morning. It's Soundbites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, an interesting little thing. Microsoft, as you know, there was a couple of weeks ago an WMF flaw in Windows. They actually came out with a patch a week early, which is fairly unprecedented these days for Microsoft. WMF is Windows meta file. It's generally used. It's for audio, video, whatever that's all about. And there were two more flaws that came out immediately afterwards, and they came out. They patched those in the regular way. So there's three flaws out there. One of the interesting things in the Windows metafile format, the WMF flaw, is an interesting, there's a guy named Steve Gibson, grc.com. Steve Gibson
where have we heard that name?
Yeah,
everywhere.
We've talked about him for years.
Everywhere.
Yeah,
Shields Up. He wrote Spin Right. He's my hero when it comes to code. He's also a bit of a tinfoil hat guy. He is. That's very true. But he has a new theory, which is that the WMF flaw, the Windows metafile flaw, is so bizarre in the way that it works that it had to be an intentional backdoor into the operating system. This was on his podcast. He does a podcast every Thursday, and he said that in that, and I don't necessarily know that's true. I have to admit that the only way you can get this flaw to work is so bizarre that you couldn't possibly do it accidentally. So, and it's actually coded to do this. It's not a mistake. It's coding. So somebody coded it in there. Now the question is there a legitimate purpose that nobody knows about yet? Or was it a disgruntled employee at Apple, at Microsoft, or was it Microsoft?
Well,
a disgruntled employee at Apple. Yeah, exactly.
What I want to know is, all right, they keep coming up with all these flaws.
Yeah.
You know, and they keep finding hole after hole after hole.
Yeah.
And they keep patching.
Yeah.
Now, supposedly,
yeah,
Vista is going to fix all this.
This flies now, in Vista.
Well, yeah, this
Vista's already had a service pack, by the way, a fix.
But that's the thing. I mean, Vista's supposed to fix it all.
Yeah.
And then have a bunch of new problems.
How can it fix what it still doesn't know about?
Yeah. Right. Well, they've already had a fix. They've already had a set of fixes, in fact. They've only already had their first service pack.
So they're on beta 2?
Yeah, they're on a beta. Right. So, service pack 1 for beta 2 is actually what they brought out. So it's kind of, you know, maybe it's not quite ready for prime time just yet.
Oh,
but
that's one thing we were talking about. I was talking about Thursday night.
Yeah.
And I happened to mention the three of us.
Sure.
On how back in the day when we used to do beta testing.
Yeah.
They used to give us the software.
Yeah, absolutely.
To beta test because they knew we were going to destroy our machines. And I literally
hit. And then when it came out, when it was off beta, you got a copy free of the product.
And that was the point of beta testing. You put weird results in. You know, yeah. I was talking about this the other day with someone else, too. The ping of death is a very common problem. You know, you send a ping with too many characters in it. What's the first thing you'd test if you're testing the ping command?
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you're only supposed to put 5 characters in a ping command. Let me put 500 and see what happens.
Yeah.
I can't get over, though, how now people are paying Microsoft.
Yeah, right.
They're paying Microsoft, who's already super rich, to beta test?
Yeah.
Well, because half the people who were beta testers just wanted a free copy of the program and didn't bother testing any.
Well, and that's part of the problem.
So they're
figuring
if you're paying to be a beta tester, you really are going to be testing the software.
Maybe. Yeah, but the problem is just because you can pay doesn't mean you're any good at being a beta tester.
Yeah, hello.
I mean, the truth is that beta testing is a science just like any other testing science, and it's
so
not easy
fun.
To do. It's not easy to do at all, so it's a tough thing. Listen, we're gonna take another break. We are. We're going to take a break. Rob's going to be in to do the news, and we'll be back with Dave Enright and Steve Ray and Dan Cole. I'm Nick Francesco. We've got Rich and Jeff and Ben and Todd on the line, so stay tuned. We'll get to all you guys after the news, but pay attention. It's news, it's sports, and it's the thing we need most, weather, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's the only 4 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites.
You like the way I did that?
I did like the way you did that. You weren't too quick. We're going to get back to the phones in 1 second. I do want to talk about our podcast at soundbites.org. I'd like to give a shout-out to all 30 people listening from New Zealand.
Hmm?
Nice.
30 people in New Zealand listen to the podcast, so.
And I do have to apologize. I'm a little bit behind in uploading the shows.
Yeah, they've been on the forums on your butt.
The show, the week that I missed, I recorded off of the Wham stream, so I've been editing the commercials out. And I don't know what, it was weird. Whatever format I recorded it in, when I opened it in my audio editor, there was like a 3-second repeat. Every time anyone said something, they said the same thing again 3 seconds later.
Really?
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 Yeah. So that was annoying. I had to figure out. So I'm going through different programs trying to figure out. It was some sort of a weird compressed AIF that my recording software used that the editing software didn't quite understand.
Right.
Well, that's the thing.
You may have had stereo channels and they were offset somehow.
No, I tried that. I'd split the tracks and deleted one of the channels and they were
still
both.
Still happened?
Yep.
Wow.
It was weird. And then there's something weird. I think it's the delay. Built into the radio system that the commercials start airing before the show was finished.
Well, yeah, there's
so
a 10-second delay.
Yeah, that 10-second delay doesn't work on the stream as it does on the broadcast.
Right. Oh, well.
Well, I've been telling folks, so now that, you know, with the live stream, that they can just go to the Wham site and just click.
Well, that's what we do.
Well, that's what I've been doing for my father-in-law, who's out in California.
Sure.
And a few other family members that are all over. I can't get it. Yeah, you can now. All you got to do is go to the Wham website, click on it, and you can listen to it.
You can listen live to the stream, or we get the...
And they love it.
We get the archives uploaded eventually.
That's right. They'll get there. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Rich from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Oh, hi, guys. I love the program.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got a situation. I went out and bought a hard drive for a guy who has a Pentium 4, 2.4 gigahertz, 512 memory. And he has IDE drive in there. And unfortunately, all the ones that were on sale were not available the day that I picked it up. So I picked up a serial ATA drive, Mac Store, installed the interface card, and I unfortunately XP Home. When I tried to run the hardware wizard, I was looking for a file. I think it was ptipbm.bol. Couldn't find it on the disk, so I couldn't install the interface. But I have since found another driver on Mac Store site, and I'm going to go over and install it maybe today or tomorrow. But
did Mac Store make the interface card or just the hard drive?
It was shipped as a kit, so it was the Mac Store card and the Mac Store drive.
All right, so what's your question?
Oh, the question is, I've never used a SATA drive in conjunction with the other type of drive.
IDE.
We're not called those PETA drives. They're parallel.
Okay, and so the question is, when, in fact, I get this interface card driver installed and bring up the drive, since the SATA uses a different interface cable and it's using its own interface card, how is the Windows operating system on the IDE drive going to treat that? Is it just going to treat it as another hard drive?
Yep, it's just another hard drive. The system doesn't care. You can mix IDE, SATAs, SCSIs, external USBs. They're all just drives to the system.
The only thing is
no, as long as the controller card works, it's just another drive.
And you're going to have to format it, though, in the control panel under system tool, or what is it, networking?
The hardware.
The hardware.
Disk manager.
Disk manager.
Yeah.
You'll find it underneath there, and you're going to have to look for it and format it under there. It's not like the old days where it chew up the drive, you couldn't access it and format it.
If you're lucky, Windows will say you've inserted a disk with no partitions. Do you want to format it?
Mm-hmm.
But you're usually not that lucky.
They ship with a Max Blast 4 software, which I guess is for formatting and partitioning and so forth as well.
Yeah, it also has a migration tool. If you're upgrading one hard drive to another, it'll migrate all your files to the new hard drive.
No, you don't need that. No.
Will I be able, if we should so desire at some point in time, to make this SATA drive the boot drive? And the
That's what that migration tool is for.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, well,
The real big advantage of SATA is, first, that it's faster. It's 150 megabytes per second, faster than the old, what we now call parallel ATA. And they've done away with the whole master-slave mess, so you don't have to set jumpers anymore.
Right.
The disadvantage is you now can only have one drive per channel. Yeah, so most of the SATA cards have at least two, if not four, channels on it. So
right.
So that's how they got rid of master slave, is by only letting you have one.
Right. So they're all masters of their own domains. Exactly. All right. Our next caller is Jeff from Webster, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. Just listening to Rich just now just tells me all the things that I don't know about computing. But the more I listen to you guys, I come away every time with something new.
Thank you. That's what we're hoping for.
We appreciate
that,
it.
Yeah. Anyways, I am sort of a newbie to the hardware end of it. I've been on the internet myself for probably 3 years, and that in itself doesn't qualify me for anything. But what I'm looking to do, I'm looking to buy or build my next computer. Now,
do it yourself?
Yeah, I've had computers apart. I put them back together. I mean, that in itself, again, doesn't say that I'm a rocket scientist by any sense of the word. But I've read some of the publications, some of the magazines that are out, and I think I can do it. But I guess my major question is, and the question maybe that your listeners would be most attuned to, would be when you're looking to upgrade. That is to say, when you're looking to replace the unit that you have, is it just better to build or is it better to buy? I understand that the economical units that are, for sale, like on television and what have you, have a lot of bundled stuff.
It used to be you could save a lot of money building your own computer from different components. It was more work for you, but we liked doing that to tinker with.
Right.
Now you can buy prepackaged computers so cheaply, you're not really saving any money or time building yourself. So now it's more an intellectual exercise. You just like to tinker and want to see what you can do.
Or you get a much more tuned machine. So, for example, if you're building your own game machine or home entertainment center.
You don't want the $299 Walmart computer.
You truly don't want
and
that.
And by building your own, you've also installed those so you know exactly... When it comes to, say, down the road, time to update drivers, well, you know the specific video card or anything else that you've put in it because you did it yourself, and you're going to know what needs to be updated.
Okay. These units that are already done, like from Dell and HP and places like that, I mean, I've heard people say that they're not easily upgradable. I mean, that they don't have... extra PCI slots and things like that.
Depends on the model you get.
And how cheap they are. That's one of the ways they're making them cheaper is removing those expansion
Days. Here's the other thing that Dell's been doing too, which, by the way, folks should know about, like you say, making them aware of it. One, when you buy a Dell, you don't get the CDs with it anymore. Uh-huh. So if you go to see your system crashes and you got to reload the operating system, well, you got to give Dell a call and pay... I don't know, what is it, $50 or better to get the operating system disk.
Oh.
They don't include those anymore.
Uh-huh.
I believe their warranty is now down to, I think, 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And like everything else, you know, they use 128 mega memory, or I've seen them with 256 standard.
Which is about half what you need to at least
exactly.
start.
So they get the price down by taking out all the things that make the computer worth using.
A three and a half inch floppy isn't there either.
Right. Let me be the guy to say this because I don't sell computers. Let me suggest that you take a look at local dealers. Dave and Steve are both local dealers, so I should be the one to say this. If you buy from a local vendor, several things happen. You can set up the components and system you want. Just like you could if you built it yourself, you can go to them and say, look, let's talk about what would be best in my system for what I'm going to do. And they'll tailor a system to your needs. Secondly, you've got a face to look at as a problem, if there's a problem. And that's the most important one. You may be able to build your own computer, but can you support your own computer? If something goes wrong, these guys can put it on their bench, swap components around, figure out what's gone wrong, and repair it. If you've built your own machine, unless you've built two, you haven't got any components to swap. You don't have the expertise these guys have built up. Dave, I think, has been in the business since the 1600s, and Steve is, although he's a puppy, he's been in since he was born. So, you've got a face to look at, and it's a better deal all the way around. So my suggestion, buy locally. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, Nick Francesco. We've got Ken and Rick and Larry on the line and sound bites on 1180 WHAM.
Talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, you should know there's a yet another email scam running around. There is no tragedy serious enough to stop people from putting out scams about them. This one, of course, is about the mining accident in West Virginia. There's an email that purports to be written by a doctor from the hospital where the miner's being treated, describing his condition and the financial assistance needed for a full survivor. They basically want you to send money to the specific address, and they'll get it to the miner for his recovery. Needless to say, that's fake. Sending the money may do your soul good, but won't do the survivor any good because it never gets to him.
Although, be
careful of that one.
Interestingly enough, the fake FBI warning email that had the sober virus in it has led to an arrest.
Yes, yes.
A guy turned himself in because he got this email, thought he got busted, so he went down to the police station.
And it was for child pornography.
Yeah.
The email came out and said, that's the one from the CIA.
Yeah, you're
or the
visiting
FBI.
Illegal sites, your IP address has been logged.
Blah, blah, blah. And the guy turned himself in. He said, I visit child pornography sites, arrest me. I thought that was great. That worked for me 100%. Yeah. No problems there. All right, our next caller is Larry from Hamlin, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Got a problem on drivers.
Uh-huh.
I have a unique problem. I have a relative down in Florida that's got a machine with 98 SD on it.
Uh-huh.
And a bunch of photographs. And before it dies and all that, I decided I'd be a smart guy. So I bought an external hard drive. And I thought this would be great. And it said it, you know, you have to have drivers for 98. And I don't know anything about drivers. So I took the whole thing down to Florida. And I set it up and I downloaded the drivers onto her machine. And I couldn't get anywhere because the machine insists on using Wizard. I think that's the thing in the old program.
Mm-hmm.
And it insists on going to a C drive, the CD drive. And I can't get there from here. So now I've got the bright idea because I'm back here and I'll be going down again. Can I download the, does it make sense to download the drivers on my machine and cut and make a CD and carry the CD down there? And then would that work? Maybe.
Mike could.
Yeah,
could,
Mike.
But didn't the drive come with its own CD with the drivers on it?
The
external
hard drive came with its own drivers for my, you know, for a regular machine, but it told me when I bought it, you got to get drivers if you're going to use it with 98SE.
Oh, so the drivers didn't come on the CD. Well, that's stupid of them.
The thing didn't come with a CD.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Well, because XP knows about them and will handle it. One of the things you might want to try is most of the wizards that come up let you choose another location, not just the CD.
Yeah, it does, but I can't. And now how do I get? I got it.
Well, you have to. I
downloaded on.
The driver that you've downloaded is either a .exe file or a zip file.
Okay.
It has to be uncompressed.
All right. It's a zip file, and it says uncompressed. And, you know, do you want to uncompress it, and where do you want to put it?
Right. So stick it in any sort of folder you want.
On the C drive.
That C drive. And then when you run the wizard, point it to that folder.
Well, the only thing I could find that it would let me do that, where I could get a commonality, was, briefcase.
No.
In the machine. I can't. I got it in her machine, and I can't get it there from here.
See, when you hook up the drive, and it says, okay, I need the drivers for it, it's going to open up a window. It says, all right, where do I look for this?
And one of the choices is the CD drive. Another choice is to pick your own.
Or usually you can type in a command, and if you type in, say...
That I couldn't do, not in that wizard. It wouldn't let me tell it where to go.
No other command that it listed, or have disk.
Well, it gave me a choice. It said, would you like to go to one of these?
And usually that's a pull-down menu, and you can pick something else.
Yeah, something on the C drive or a folder in the C drive.
Okay, well, now I just got to go back and do more work. But doing it on... I figured I could download the drivers on my machine.
If you download the drivers on your machine,
which is XP.
Uncompress them to a folder, and it may be that the zip drive creates its own folder, then move that whole folder over to the CD.
Burn a CD.
Yeah. With that folder on it, because it may be looking for a specific folder name, then that should do it for you.
Sounds like about 7 trips to Florida before I get those.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm not doing anything next week. You want to get my ticket? No problem. Let me know what airline we're going
on. Run right down there.
Yep.
Hey, thanks much.
All right. Thanks, Larry. Good luck.
I wouldn't mind going to Florida. Nice and warm.
Oh, geez, and crackers, you're just getting old.
Thank you. I am.
It's hardly even. It's still above freezing out there.
But I'm on blood thinners.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You are. So you need to go to Florida. All right. We're all going to take a quick break while we send Dave to Florida. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, maybe. Steve Ray, Dan Cole, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham! Remember, all began
in 1804.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Sound Bites. Now, we're going to go back to the phones now. I promised you that we were going to talk about Macworld, and I know that you Mac people are just quivering, waiting for that to happen. That will happen after the top of the hour. But first, we'll go back to the phones, and we'll talk to Rick from Williamson, New York. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
Yeah, thanks, guys. Listen, I'm running I got a Dell laptop. They're XPS top of the line. It's got XP Pro for the operating system, and I got Norton antivirus protecting it. I can't get any secure websites. I've been through the 128 encryption. I've been through all the website suggestions, and you know, I don't know if it's something to do with Service Pack 2, but I'm right at the point where I'm ready to just wipe it out and reinstall everything and see if that doesn't take care
of
it.
Do you have also the Norton Internet Security on it?
Yeah, I think that's in that antivirus.
Yeah, that's try shutting that down. I'll bet you get in.
Yeah, it's probably set too paranoid, so it doesn't let you get places you want
to. I have taken that Norton Internet Security off of more machines, and they run better, faster. I just put Zone Alarm on. So try disabling that, and I'll guarantee you, you can probably get onto the internet and do surfing. Because the newer versions of this internet security, like I say, have been causing a lot of issues. And the other interesting thing that we found lately is folks have come in and say, well, I ran a scan on my machine. We've had four times, and I'd say the past 3 weeks, where McAfee has caught viruses that Norton hasn't caught and cleared them up with the McAfee and then run it, and it's working fine. So, like I say, try taking that off, and I'll bet you that might, you know, how you can disable it for, say, 5 hours or until your next boot. Try doing that and see if you can get on. I'll bet you can.
Okay, because I know I've tried a couple times to set it to the lowest security level.
Yeah, shut the security down totally, and I'll bet you dollars to donuts, and I like glazed ones.
Yeah, right.
You'll be able to get in.
Give that a try and let us know.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Our next caller, Tony from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Tony. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I think you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you so much.
My son's computer, a couple days ago, he went to shut it down, and 5 minutes later, it turned itself back on. And it did this about three times, and to the point, he says, Dad, you got to do something with this thing. So I came up and took a look at it, and I went through the normal sequence. Sure enough, it went back on again. And then I did like the control alt delete shutdown process, and computer shut itself down. Back on it went. So we finally pulled the plug. The next day, my son went to turn it back on, and all we heard is like a little snap, crackle, pop, and like little diodes, resistors popping inside. Like, you guys got an idea what might be happening with this computer?
Sounds like two separate problems.
Yeah, one, that's two different problems. Cause,
won't like, turn off and now won't turn on.
Yeah, that problem, your first problem, not shutting down, I've got two customers that are, you know, having that problem, you know, and I'm still trying to figure it out. But the snap, crackle, pop sounds like you might have gotten a surge or something else.
Or the power supply just coincidentally failed.
Yeah.
There's
will it
some...
even boot up?
Well, when he pulled the plug, he could have had a spark.
Hmm? Popped a fuse.
Well,
maybe.
No, what we did is it's on a power strip with a surge protector on it, and we just basically shut the switch off to that just because it kept on turning itself on.
Yeah. Sometimes the turn itself back on is a setting in BIOS. Automatically restart after power failure or wake. There's wake on administrator access, wake on LAN. There's certain settings that can make a computer turn itself back on, which you want turned on if it's a server, so it never turns itself off.
Okay.
But now that it won't turn on at all.
Yeah, that might be a power supply. Do you get any lights at all?
It just flickered on. It just flickered on, and then we just left it off. We didn't sit there and try to play with it anymore because we figured definitely there was something wrong going on. I have a suggestion from one gentleman that does a lot of his own work, and he says it sounds like a power supply.
Yeah, it could be a power supply.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It may be that in pulling the plug, you zap something. That can happen.
I mean, $35, $40, you can get, you know, a 350, 400-watt power supply.
And it's also possible that you tried to turn it on too soon. Many power supplies require a certain cool down time before they'll go on again.
Yeah, they got to reset.
So it may well be that if you wait, you know, by now, of course, it should work just fine. Anyway,
right.
Give those things a try and let us know. I'm afraid we're
moving on.
My machine does that actually when my main Windows box, when I have to turn it off, I have to wait about 10, 20 seconds before I can turn it back on. Of course, I'm always getting impatient. And I turn it on and nothing happens, and I get all porky about it. And then I remember, oh, yeah, yeah, I got to wait. And then I wait, and then it goes right back on without a problem. So, duh, you know, you just got to wait. You just got to be patient. And, boy, I tell you what, when you're sitting there staring at a blank screen, 30 seconds is a whole long time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's pretty amazing. We're going to be back on the other side of the hour with all kinds of interesting stuff, including a Macworld report. It's time for news, weather, and sports, and we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, and me, Nick, from 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites. Now, I promise you, I know you Mac people have just been sitting in your chairs quivering. Steve's going to tell us all the wonderful things that happened at Macworld this last week. Go, Steve. You got 8 seconds.
8 seconds. Did anything happen?
All right, that's all we got from Macworld.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard.
Move on to the next caller.
Haven't been out from in front of your computer in the entire 3-4 days of the...
I actually haven't had a chance to finish watching the keynote.
Oh, jeez Louise.
But, Steve Jobs in his traditional showmanship announced some really interesting sales figures. They sold 14 million iPods for the holiday quarter, which was like double what all the analysts were saying. They've now sold 40 million iPods, announced a deal with Chrysler, so that now 40% of all...
Well, but the thing is that, like, half of those went to people who'd already bought the previous 11 generations, and the minute a new one comes out, they sell the old one and buy a new one.
Yep. So everyone always has to have the latest. They announced a deal with Chrysler, which brings up to 40% of new cars sold in 2006. We'll have an iPod docking kit built in to all new cars. And then a couple of new software announcements, the new iLife 06. One of the big things is it will now work with third-party DVD burners. One of the annoyances in the past is that Apple's DVD burning software would only work with Apple's DVD burners, which kind of makes sense, but annoying if you got a third-party drive.
Right.
And then, of course, the big announcements in his typical one more thing. They announced two new computer models. And what was very weird is that none of the rumors that were flying around the internet were true. So that's the sort of thing I like the best. None of the rumors were true. Everyone got it wrong. In fact, annoyingly, Apple revised the iMac, which is their flagship desktop consumer computer, that they just revised in October. So it's a little annoying. But the big announcement is that they're now using the Intel Core Duo processor. And it's basically a dual-core chip, so it's like two CPUs on one little piece of silicon. And the implications and ramifications of putting a dual processor chip in a consumer machine makes us really wonder what's going to happen in the pro machines.
Right.
Apple, by doing this, are about 6 months ahead of their plan. They announced last June that they hoped to have the first Intel-based Mac shipping by this June, so they're about 6 months ahead. The new Macs are dual, as I said, the dual-core processors at the same price, so they're twice as fast, it's the same price. And it also marked the end of a long-standing Macintosh product line, the PowerBook, which has been around probably 15 years or so, and released by the new MacBook, based again on...
Yeah, I don't know that I'm a big fan of that name. I realize they got to keep the Mac name in there somewhere.
Well, and that's one of the big arguments we've been having. The MacBook Pro just doesn't roll off your tongue as well. And some of that is because of the similarities between PowerBook and PowerPC. But it was named PowerBook when they were using the Motorola 68000 chip, so it has nothing to do with the PowerPC. In fact, the jokes back then is they were going to call it the PowerBook.
Right.
But that didn't work. But so the MacBook Pro replacing the Apple PowerBook line. And one of the neatest things is they now have the EyeSight camera built into the laptop, just like they do on the iMac desktop. So for video conferencing, instant messaging, you can record from the video camera into your iMovie. So that you can do very easy home movies built right onto the computer. A really strange thing is that they haven't discontinued the old models yet. One of the biggest issues with the new Intel-based machines is you need new software, which happens on all of all the time when new products come out. Because it's based on a different CPU, we're going to start hearing about a new term that Apple's using called universal binary. Application developers are going to have to rewrite all of their programs in universal binary, so they'll run on PowerPC or Intel. And that's one of the reasons they announced it last year to the developers conference, to give those developers time. Yeah. So all of Apple's flagship programs, the iLife programs, the iWork programs, the operating system itself are all universal binary and will run on PowerPC or Intel. It's the third-party software. And there's another technology built into OS X now for the Intel machines called Rosetta that translates PowerPC instructions into Intel instructions.
So slowing it down a little bit, but still they run.
Right. It slows it down a little bit, but since they're dual-core machines, that you probably won't notice it being any slower than the old machine.
Right.
So that programs like Microsoft Office and Quicken and Photoshop and all your regular applications will still run on the Intel-based machines in the Rosetta translator. Some programs won't run, like Apple's Final Cut Pro. So we're expecting a new version of that anytime now.
Yeah, anytime now.
Anytime now. So programs that require a G4 won't work on the new Rosetta, because the Rosetta only does G3 instructions. Most of the programs like Photoshop and Word and those things that work on the G4 and G5 don't require those chips,
right. But
they can take advantage of the faster stuff it does. So the average regular consumer software will still work fine on an Intel machine, and the average consumer isn't going to notice that they're on a different processor. It doesn't matter they're on a different processor, and they won't care they're on a different processor. They just want their computer to work. So for the high-end workstations, the what we currently now have with the Quad G5, we're really excited to anticipate what Apple's going to come out with in the professional lines. So it's a dual-core desktop machine, same price, $1,200 for a 17-inch iMac with the video camera built in, with the remote control built in. And they also added the front row media software and the remote control to the PowerBook, the MacBook, and we're going to do it now.
Yep.
And the fact that this is the MacBook Pro replacing the PowerBook kind of implies that the MacBook is going to be coming out to replace the iBook.
Oh, right.
So, that was one of the things. Why did they call it MacBook Pro? Why not just MacBook? Because there's already going to be something else called MacBook, maybe.
Right.
So the keynote is available on Apple's website. You can download or stream it and watch that as well. They have a couple of new TV commercials coming out. They have an iTunes commercial with Wynton Marsalis, who did their last music event. It's kind of nice to have an Apple commercial that isn't rap and hip-hop.
Yeah.
Nice smooth jazz. And then they've got a really cute Intel commercial about what's an Intel chip doing inside a Mac, a whole lot more than it ever did in a PC.
Right.
A dull little PC running dull little programs. So it's kind of a neat little commercial. And the CEO of Intel,
they're just trying to cover up that they're finally coming over to our side of the world.
Come to the dark side.
Yeah,
we've been
running on Intel chips for quite a while. And the Mac folks have finally come to realize that's a good chip, so they're finally coming
over. From an engineering standpoint, the PowerPC was a better chip. But as we've talked about in the past, it's just too hot.
Wait. I just have to hear this, because when we kept telling you that, all we got was over and over and over again, no, it's the megahertz myth, it's better, mm-hmm, it's blah, blah, mm-hmm, blah, blah, blah. Now, all of a sudden, you're in the other camp. Are you just ignoring everything you said?
Reverse engineering.
Well, not really, but the strange thing is, if you look at the processors, the new MacBook Pro came out with a 1.67 Intel Core Duo processor, replacing the 1.67 PowerPC.
Right.
So the megahertz wars sort of got lost on all sides, because none of the companies, Intel, AMD, Motorola, IBM, can't get the chips to run any faster by megahertz. So they're adding second cores.
Right.
And that's why we're waiting till later this year, supposedly the next generation, whether it be called Pentium 5 or whatever it's going to be. is supposedly due out.
Well, now it's right now Intel is they're shipping the Core Duo for the Macs. And I guess what you said, Dell had a laptop that uses
HP
the Core
does.
Duo,
HP,
which
yeah,
implies
a
that the Core Solo is coming out to be a cheaper model.
Right.
And then the new Viv, was it V-I-V-V?
Vive.
And then Intel just went through their logo change. They raised the E a little
they
bit.
Raised the E and dropped the word inside.
Yep.
How much did that cost them? I would have done it for them for a couple of million.
Yeah, they probably spent hundreds of millions of dollars in research and marketing. So it's Intel, the interesting dichotomy between Intel and Apple, that Intel says, here's the chips we're going to release this year. Here's what we're working on for next year. Here's our roadmap for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Apple won't tell us what they're doing this afternoon.
Right.
So the conflict between the two CEOs is going to be interesting to see over the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Right. But if you want to see all this stuff, obviously just head on over to Apple.com. They've got the MacBook Pro, the iMac, the iPod Nano. They talk about the iMac. Now, the iMac G5 still is out there.
They
the Mac
haven't
Mini
discontinued
is still out
them.
There.
And one of the big reasons is because of the Rosetta translation. If you want full speed application, still get a PowerPC machine. And OS 9 is finally and officially completely dead. It will not run on an Intel based computer. So if you're still running 10-year-old software, it's like inside of like the Windows 98 and 95. If you have to run 10-year-old software, you cannot buy a new Intel based Mac. So the PowerPC machines are still going to be around for a while.
So unless you rewrite your a lot of companies wrote their own applications.
Right.
Now they have to rewrite them into this next generation. So that makes sense. But head on over to Apple.com and you'll see all of that stuff. It's the Nano, the Shuffle, the X-Serve. The X-Serves are still all G5s, right?
Yeah, the only two machines they announced were the iMac and the MacBook. The initial projection was that all Macs would be shipping on Intel machines by the end of 2007. But they're about 6 to 8 months ahead of schedule, so they're saying probably by the end of 2006, all of the machines will have switched over.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense. And the PowerPC G5, it says, introducing the world's first 64-bit desktop processor.
And that's a real big annoyance in the engineering communities, is that the Intel machines are 32-bit. So we're losing some of the advantages the PowerPC had.
I've always been a huge fan of the G5 processor.
Yep.
I think it's a great chip.
Well, it's based on IBM's Power chip, which is in their servers.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that Apple's using a server chip in a desktop. But you look at the Power Mac G5, and it's almost workstation class. It isn't
really
a desktop.
No, you know, desktops nowadays, it used to be, you only need a desktop because you're only doing word processing and spreadsheet and maybe a little home database, and you're done. That's a desktop. But nowadays, people are doing, you know, they're creating their own movies, and they're doing audio editing, and they're doing 100 million other things.
We had a
they
machine
really require
burning
the kind
a
of power you find in a server.
We had a machine in this week from a university, and he's doing gene splicing and molecular biology.
Well, duh.
And that's his desktop computer.
That's his desktop computer, and people are doing that all over the place.
Yep.
You know, if you're doing huge, let's talk to the genealogy people.
Yep.
You can't be fast enough when you've got a database of, you know, a couple of thousand people with all the information and pictures and everything else that are in them. You can't be fast enough.
Yeah.
So
well, that was
you
one
definitely
of the,
want that kind of power.
That was one of the big things about the genealogy, working with DNA, that you need a database with 3 billion records in it.
Right.
To work on a DNA strand.
Right.
Yep.
And in fact, I will argue that most servers need less power than most desktops now. Nowadays.
Yeah.
Because if all your, for example, a web server, what do you need?
You need bandwidth.
You need bandwidth,
and
but you don't
disk
need
space.
And disk space, you don't need power.
Don't need power.
Database server, you need a lot of RAM and you need a lot of disk space, but you don't need a lot of processor.
No.
Not compared to
basically,
the, you know.
Nowadays, all they're doing is shuffling the file in or out to somebody.
Right. So, you know, unless you're actually doing some sort of computing on the server, the server doesn't really need to be that powerful.
And we're
your
seeing
latency is all in the network, not in the in the server itself.
And we're seeing that a lot more now in universities with clusters.
Yeah,
you put 1,000 desktop computers together, and you have a supercomputer bigger than any Cray or thinking machine. But it's interesting how much faster desktops have gotten in the last few years.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I can't. You know, for my server. Even my servers at work, I've got great machines, but you know they don't have to, except for a few things that we're doing specifically, they don't have to be quite as powerful as they are. And yet, every single person I talk to, their desktop is too slow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's just that's just the way it works. All right,
can calculate the orbit of the sun, but if I have to wait 2 seconds for Word to open.
Well, that's exactly. Exactly. All right, we're going to talk to Dan from Rochester, New York. He's got a pop-up problem. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Yeah, I talked to you guys last week about this Movie Land pop-up. It keeps coming up telling me I have a trial that's expired on it. I search for it, and I find it into Owner Cookies, and I delete it from Owner Cookies, put it in the basket and delete it, and it still keeps coming up. What am I doing wrong?
Have you danced the Security Tango?
Not recently.
Yeah, that's better.
I thought we talked about that last week. I apologize. You need to dance the tango. Go to securitytango.com, click the Let's Dance button, and do the whole thing top to bottom.
Okay, I've got a printout of it, so I know how to follow through, but I haven't done it in about a week or so, so I bet, okay.
Yeah, I would suggest that's really where you need to go at this point, because whenever you've got any kind of pop-up like that, that you can't find the software or whatever.
That's
and of course, if you're still using, right, and of course,
it's a big one now.
Yeah, if you're still using Internet Explorer and you're still using Outlook Express, you're just going to reinfect yourself again.
But there is a known issue with the Movie Land software not uninstalling itself. You get a 3-day trial because they really want to sucker you in.
Yeah.
And it's really, I'm finding a lot of stuff on Google here. It's really, really easy to download the demo and sign up for it. But it's extremely difficult to remove it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right. Good luck. That's an interesting problem we're finding in a lot of places. It's so easy to install software and so difficult to uninstall it. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we've got Joyce and Ken and Mel on the line. We've got some more interesting things to talk about, including our website. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers, but then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Chris Settlemyer.
And you notice Chris has come in for Dan. They just
slid right in.
We're just knocking them off. It is so hard to do that particular job.
For us.
For them. No, for them.
Yeah, but to deal with
us. To deal with us is what I'm saying. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. Dan couldn't handle it. He's collapsed on the floor right now, weeping like a baby. And Chris is in
just
hoping.
Just stepping over him.
Hoping desperately to get through the entire hour. Chris, how are you holding up so far?
Hoping desperately to get through the entire hour.
There you go.
Before we jump too far forward, I put a link up for a site I found on how to remove the Movie Land trial. The trick is that none of the programs it loads are called Movie Land.
Yeah. That would be it.
You got to look for something called Media Pipe. IT bills, alt payments, or alt pay. So that's unfortunately one of the problems with a lot of software is the thing you have to remove doesn't have the name of what you're looking for in it.
So Dan, check out our website.
And that's what a lot of folks sometimes don't understand when they bring it into a repair shop to have stuff removed. 99% of the time, it's never named what you're looking for. It's always some other name, and you got to go figure out what that name is.
And you know what really astonishes me, and I'll talk for you guys now because, you know, it's less of a problem if I, who don't do any of this stuff, talk about it. It always astounds me that somebody will take their car in, get a $700 bill, and say, well, it was worth it because they fixed what was wrong. And they'll bring it to a computer dealer, and it's a $100 bill, and they start complaining.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not really paying for the time it was on the bench, and you're not really paying for the material that's in it. You're paying for the expertise of the people who fixed it in an hour rather than in the 10 hours it would have taken you, or the never that it would have taken you. I mean, most people wouldn't be able to know that it's, you know, all these other names and go find them and dig them out and remove them and make sure they're actually gone and protect the system and all that other stuff. And yet we complain because it's the computer. It's so simple. It's so easy to use.
I get quite a bit, and I'm sure Steve does too. Oh, this should only take you a few minutes. Yeah, it'll probably take me just a few minutes, but how long would it take you? You're not, like you said, not paying for the time. You're paying for the knowledge and the experience that's stuffed up in this head that's been there, and I've been doing this for more than I care to remember, because that means I'm getting older.
Right.
It takes you 10 minutes to clear a spot on the bench and plug all the wires in.
Right.
So you're not paying, for the time. Yeah, it might only take me half the time that it would take somebody 3 or 4 hours, but don't penalize me for that because.
And please remember, you may have to wait your turn. There might be three or four
problem.
People ahead of you in line. You may not see them standing there, but their computers are in the back.
I have the same thing. I actually need to bring a machine back to you because one of the fans, and I don't know if it's in the power supply or in the system, is just making this noise that makes me crazy. Mm-hmm. But I admit I'm just like everybody else. When I bring my machine into Dave, I'm thinking, this should take 5 minutes. Oh, no, wait. He's probably got 35 people ahead of me, and I should leave it for a couple of days.
It may take five minutes, but 3 days to get 5 minutes.
Right. For those of you who do any sort of project management, there's elapsed time and there's the actual time. So you got to be careful of that. Listen, as long as we're talking about the website, let's talk about the website. We have our own website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was, would you implant an RFID, radio frequency identification, an RFID chip in yourself? 139 of you, 290 of you voted, making it 139 in the all-time hit list. The choices were sure, no thanks, only under very, very special circumstances. And, of course, the Macintosh. Not shockingly, the no thanks, vast majority, 67% of you said no thanks, and 17 zombies clicked on the Macintosh. This week's poll is all about, this is the one that most amuses me. This week's poll is all about the Macs. It's all about the new Intel Macs. You know, what do you, and the choices are, I think the new Intel Macs are insanely great. Do they even use that term anymore? Is that?
Yeah, Guy Kawasaki patented that term.
Okay.
But, yep.
I have to pay him now?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He's coming after
you. I don't think we can afford that guy. Good luck collecting. I think the new Intel Macs are insanely great. Pretty nifty, meh, just another computer. Yawn, thud, and the Macintosh. So far, it appears that we have 77 votes. Yawn's thud seems to be ahead at the moment with 32%, closely followed by meh, just another computer at 30%. And at the bottom, even though this entire poll is about the Mac, and you'd think these people would have picked insanely great, six zombies just simply clicked on the Macintosh. Probably didn't even read the poll, just went there, clicked on the Macintosh, then looked at the result and said, oh, crap. I could have made a point.
That's one of our fears. The Mac zealots are afraid that these Intel Macs are going to be, just another computer. We're going to lose the specialness of our Macs.
Well, and that's an interesting problem, isn't it?
No,
I mean,
there's
still Macs. It's still the OS X operating system, and it really shouldn't matter what the box is underneath it. It shouldn't matter what the chip is inside. If you're wrapped up in a piece of hardware as opposed to the actual system itself, there's something really wrong there.
But they've come to the dark side.
They have. They've come to the cheaper side. Is where they've come. At any rate, when you're done putting in your poll, I know that's not enough for you because you're a vociferous lot, and so you want to add more. Luckily, you can go to the little yellow box underneath, click on Give Us Your Opinion. That takes you to my website at asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Chris is there. And you can give us your opinion. We've got 11 of them so far, a few of which actually seem to have something to do with the actual poll, which is unusual for us. And then when you're done with that, come back and check out what else is up on the site. We've got forums. We've got everything else. It's a great website. And feel free to wander around and ask Nick. It's only $15 a year, and there's a lot of nifty stuff there as well. But we're going to go back to the phones
now.
Let
me mention one more thing. Another odd thing that came out of Macworld, that Apple and Microsoft have signed a pact that Microsoft is committing to writing Mac software for at least the next 5 years, and specifically the Microsoft Office package, which is necessary on a computer for business use these days almost.
No, it isn't.
Although a lot of businesses think it is, but there's plenty of alternatives.
Right. Many of which are free. Save the $500 bucks or $700.
And the really annoying thing is that a couple of days after Microsoft announces this, we're working on the Macs, we're committed to the Macs, they discontinue Windows Media Player for the Mac.
Right.
So there's another.
Yeah, but you know what? Considering everything that's come out for Windows Media Player, that's a good thing.
Well, and Microsoft's program was pretty crappy anyway.
Yeah.
There was a better program called Flip for Mac.
Right.
And so now Microsoft is linking to them on their page. So
yeah.
We're not going to develop it anymore, but you can use these guys, which is a better player, integrates it into QuickTime, but it doesn't do the Windows digital rights management.
Great.
Well, that means you can't buy stuff off of the Windows-based music systems.
Oh, yeah. Like there's any Mac person on earth who's going to go to the Windows-based music system to buy something.
Well, choices are good.
Yeah. Yeah, like anybody would pick them.
Well, and the iTunes...
I mean, let's get a little realistic about this.
The iTunes music store is approaching 1 billion songs sold.
Right. So, I mean, even Windows people go to the iTunes store.
Yep.
You know, let's just face it. Apple did a great, great thing with iTunes. They brought it out at a good price, easy to use, a huge array of available stuff.
It's all about the accessories.
Well, and it's all, but even, you know, my daughter, I've taught her, you know, a lot of her friends get stuff, obviously free, downloaded, swapped around. I've told my daughter, it's a buck a song. You will pay the buck a song. And she does. She saves her money. She buys music, and that's the thing that makes sense to me.
Yep.
You know, teach them from the beginning. Teach your children. Okay, we're gonna go on back to the phones before I sing. Stop me before I sing again.
Yeah.
Joyce from Victor, New York.
She's
welcome,
been patiently
Joyce.
Waiting 40
you have,
minutes.
You have Joyce. What's your question?
I have a question. I keep getting a pop-up system intrusion detected. I can't get rid of it. I right-clicked on it, and sometimes it takes me to Mozilla Firefox, and I clicked on that to delete it, and I can't get rid of it. It just keeps coming up and up and up.
Is it SpyX?
Yeah.
Yeah, is there anything else in that window?
Wait a minute. You said it was?
I didn't get that window at all yesterday, but I got it all week.
Yeah, but it's called SpyX?
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Yeah, what it is...
The malware.
Yeah.
It's a fake message trying to scam you into buying something.
Right. But the thing that is, once you get it, you're infected.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, Adware and SpyBot don't get rid of it.
Right.
Right.
And there's a couple utilities. Well, there's one specifically. I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to try to see if I can locate it. That we've been using because we've had a number of machines right now come in with this SpyX, because it literally takes over your machine, says, well, you're infected, and this SpyX product can clean out your machine. Well, it's infected your machine to sell
to begin
this
with.
Product.
Right.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, I had another screen that came up when I did my scan with Norton.
Mm-hmm.
Did all the scan, and it said there was a Trojan.
Mm-hmm.
And I quarantined it, but I can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Part of it.
Let me suggest this both to you and, in fact, to Dave. If you go to the Soundbites website at soundbites.org, there's a links tab. About halfway down the set of links are Dave's tips. He puts a new one in every week.
Let me
suggest that you make a tip for WebEx.
I'll get that one in for this within the next day or so.
Yeah,
we'll
I just
go to
post
that and check that. And
yeah, I'll put something up.
Yeah, give him a day or two, but he'll get that up right away. And if you go to soundbites.org, click on the links tab, click on Dave's tips.
I'll have it up, say, Monday night at the latest.
And
okay,
I just post-
that's fine. I've lived with it for over a week. So
yeah. I just posted a link to a program that can try to remove SpyX, and not a program, a procedure. It's quite difficult.
It is.
Through the registry. It's very, very dangerous program and very, very hard to remove, which is the problem.
Well, the other thing that we've been running into, and as Tony Placilla would say, you know, the SpyX came out, and then the script kiddies got a hold of it.
Yeah.
And they might make other iterations which hide other files. And this is what takes us the time. You know, yeah, it's very simple to get rid of once we know what to get rid of.
Right.
But we can eat up 2-3 hours trying to find what to get rid of.
Yeah, a dozen different programs named weird little things, random numbers, random letters.
Or that version, and then there's other iterations.
Right. All right, our next caller... Mel from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Mel. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. A little cold out today, though. I guess we finally got that snow.
Hey, summer's almost over. Get past it.
All right, I'm going to get my bathing suit ready then.
There you go.
Ha, ha, ha. Hey, listen, I just got a camera. I'm running XP Media Center, and I plugged it in to my computer, and my wizard won't come up. And I'm wondering, why is that? XP is supposed to recognize everything.
How are you connecting the camera? USB?
USB, bam, plugged it right in. I even tried using the, I bought a memory, one of those chips for the, to read the,
Do you have any other USB devices that are being recognized?
I really don't have anything else to plug in.
It may well be that your USB is turned off in the BIOS.
It's what now?
In the BIOS, it's a screen that
The setup page, you know, when it's first booting up, it'll say like F2 to setup.
Right.
Go into that.
Okay. Yeah, and you're literally going to have to go in there and go down to either the second or third item in that list. You're going to get a blue screen, and it's usually going to be divided. And what you're looking for is the onboard USB. You got to check to see if that's enabled or disabled. I mean, the default is enabled.
Okay.
But some manufacturers or who knows what, other programs might disable it. So you got to go in there and check it because, yes, Windows XP, the minute you plug anything into the USB ports, it's going to let you know.
So
and
it
if
may
it's not,
not
doing that, it might be disabled.
Right. It may not be your camera that's the problem. It may be Windows.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, when I click it on, I just hit F2 really fast and stuff, and then it'll come
F2
up?
F2 or delete. Usually
it
on the screen,
on your
it'll
system.
Tell you.
Yeah.
Like on a Dell, it's F2. On a lot of machines, it's the delete key.
Compaq is F10.
Yep.
I got HP.
HP? I believe that's F2 also.
Basically, when you turn the machine on, start tapping the F2 key.
F2 or
when I
delete.
F2, look for something to enable.
Yep.
Right. You'll see a bunch of screens and look for USB, and it's probably disabled on those screens.
Like I said, it was working fine before, and all of a sudden it just didn't come up anymore. It doesn't give me any choices. It used to come up and then say, hey, what do you want to do?
Something broke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try that.
Something
let us
changed.
Know.
Yep.
I will.
Okay.
That's the other problem we have sometimes. Why did this quit working? Something broke.
Yeah.
It worked fine yesterday.
Sometimes the answer is
sometimes
something
broke. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Sunspots. That's what we blame it on.
Sunspots. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Chris and Nick on Soundbites on 1180 WHKM.
Whams, you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Chris Settlemyer still.
he's groggy. He's groggy, but he's here. That's
he's still
the important
tripping
thing.
Over some of the other bodies that are still
I know. Now. We've got him strewed in there. He's now stacked in the corner like cordwood, but Chris is still with us. Before we get back to the phones, you should know that a brand new law has been passed that says if you post something anonymously online and or using some sort of fake name, you know, like, everybody in the Soundbites forum, everybody on just about every forum on earth, if it is annoying to someone else, it's probably illegal and you could probably be arrested. It's the first known instance of federal prosecution for cyber harassment, actually. And so it's kind of important to be aware of that. It may institute an actual era of politeness online.
Wait a minute. What out there isn't going to be annoying to one person?
Yeah, it's going to be overturned really quickly because there's no definition of annoying.
Right. Yeah.
I find that annoying.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I find you annoying that you find that annoying. Yeah.
I'm annoyed.
All right, we're back. And where's the Domino's Noid when you need him? We're going to go back to the phones, and we'll talk to Robert. Robert, where are you calling from?
I'm from Palmyra.
Robert from Palmyra, what's your question?
I got a graphics situation here. Every time I go to a certain site, it's a big download topographic site. When I scroll down, when the map's fully downloaded or uploaded, as you say, the point that's past the end of the screen sort of disappears when I go up to re-look at it.
Yeah.
I was wondering if it's a space problem or a site problem.
It's likely your machine. How much memory do you have?
Well, I did a defragging and...
No. I'm talking about RAM, not the hard drive.
RAM? It's 366, I believe.
Yeah, that would not be enough. Not enough. Yeah.
How much video RAM on your graphics card?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's
probably not enough.
Yeah,
that's the problem. What's
You're
happened
overdriving
nowadays
your system.
Is, how old is your system?
It's about 5 years.
It's definitely not good enough then. What happened is a lot of people and have a lot of problems with this nowadays, and it's because they have older machines with very small amounts of RAM on the video card, or they bought one of those really inexpensive machines with no RAM on the video card.
Mine was used.
Yeah, and
mine used.
See, and that's and it's very 98? Likely that it just doesn't have a lot of RAM on the video card, and therefore, what basically happens is the card fills up and then just throws the rest of it away.
Are you running Windows 98?
Yeah.
There's your other problem. It's an operating system that is no longer supported.
And more and more places and websites aren't going to work with it.
And
it's unfortunate.
And 128 mega memory is all you can use on that. And video cards, 10 to 1 odds, it's a PCI video. So
basically your choices are buy a new computer or don't go to that website.
Yeah.
And that's becoming an unfortunate choice for a lot of older computers.
I hate to say that, but it's absolutely true. What happens a lot is that if you've got a computer that's even 3 years old, it may well be that things have moved on.
Was it like, you know?
And the same with people. I feel bad for the folks who are still on dial-up. There are a whole lot of websites that are either ludicrously slow or incapable of being reached.
Yeah, they say dogs and cats, it's seven years for one human year. It's got to be like 20 to 1 for computers.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I ran into it with another client.
A 3-year-old computer is really old these days.
Yeah, really old.
Well, I just had a client that was complaining because they got reinfected. I said, well, that's not my fault, but the reason they got reinfected was because they're still on dial-up, and they didn't wait the time for the complete... I think in this case it was the Norton file to download to update their machine.
20-30 minutes to download a virus update. You don't want to be online you aren't online that long, so it never gets updated.
Right.
Yeah. And it's doing in the background, but you got to wait for it.
You got to wait for it.
And they didn't.
And it's a real problem that we have with older machines, and I wish there was a better answer.
People don't think that's old, and unfortunately it is.
It is, yeah.
Well, it is in terms of technology, yeah. And if you're going to be going to a web, that's why I always tell people, if you're going to buy the most you can afford right now. I know everybody's intrigued by these $300 desktops or $200 desktops. They're
plan
great.
Plan to buy a new one every year.
Every single year. And even so, plan to upgrade it because it only comes with 128 meg of RAM. It's got shared video memory. They're going to find the same problem that Robert just found the day they turn it on.
Well, like you keep saying, the price of poker keeps going up.
Exactly.
And you got to deal with it. I mean, if you want to be on the internet and surf.
There's probably a market for some company to make a low bandwidth web page that still runs with old video cards and dial-up.
Well, you can certainly do it. Oh, I'd like to thank, by the way, what is it like video, what is it like website critique week? 8 separate people told me about things that I should be changing on my website this week. 8 separate people, including a couple people who sent entire prospectuses. Thank you. God bless each and every one of you. But I didn't realize it was open season on Nick this week.
It means we're getting visitors.
We are getting visitors, and that's the important thing. Our next caller is Steven. Steven, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Rochester.
Rochester, New York. What's your question?
Actually, I have two questions. They seem pretty simple, but I'm just...
Yeah, the questions are always simple, Steven.
I'm running a Windows XP Professional, and I'm just curious if there's like a screen capture feature that's like on the Macintosh?
Sure.
Print screen.
Okay. It's confusing because the button says print screen, but it doesn't actually print the screen.
No,
but
it
takes a picture
the
of the screen, puts it on the clipboard, so then you can open MS Paint or any other graphics program and paste, or even Word, and paste, and then you'll get that picture that you just took.
There you go. What's your other question?
Okay. My other question is, I do a lot of research on the internet, and I do a lot of clicking and dragging of images.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, I used to be able to just click and drag onto my desktop, and I'll just put them in a folder, no problem. But recently, I've been clicking, and I would drop it to the desktop, but then it would ask me, do I want to transfer this image here, and I'd have to click yes or no. And granted, I don't do much, you know, dragging of images. It's a lot of text, but it kind of gets annoying after a while because I'm used to just click, drag, click, drag, click, drag, and all of a sudden it's just click, drag, yes.
Yeah. It's very possible that you have something, a JavaScript of some sort, stuck in your cache. If you clear the cache, that may fix it.
Okay. It also might be a recent security update. Wasn't there something in Windows where it warns you about downloading stuff?
Yes.
So it's you are literally downloading a file from your computer, and maybe it's that WMF patch.
Yeah.
You're downloading a picture, and it's possible for viruses to hide inside pictures. So now there's an extra warning that you sure you want to download this picture.
But at least try that, and we'll see where that goes. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Dave and Steve and Chris and me, Nick. We've got Patricia, Charlie, and Tim on the line, and we'll see how far we can get on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Terror. Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Chris Suttlemeyer.
And this is Soundbites. We're back to the phone, and we're talking to Patricia. Welcome, Patricia. What's your question?
Hey, Nick. I'm just calling to sing the praises of Dave Enright. I use his services for business reasons on almost a weekly basis, and I got to tell you, the service can't be beat.
Thank you, Patty.
No problem. It's, the turnover time is fabulous. The price is great. And I couldn't think of a better person to take our business to.
Another unsolicited testimonial
Thank
from a business
much.
Person out in the community.
It.
And well, Patricia, I'll call you this week. I know I've been very, very busy, and I've been very lax.
And that's one of the things that both Dave and I in our companies do is we develop relationships with our customers and help them with their needs, figure out what they want to do with
exactly.
their business. It's not just a big warehouse that churns out boxes.
And just get the customer in. I know you guys are the same way. It's, treat your customers fairly and, care about what they're doing because they care about their machines and you got to be sensitive to that and just not push them out the door. But like you say, build that long-term relationship that they're going to tell their other friends because that's, good word of mouth get spread so, but bad word of mouth spreads even faster like a wildfire. And we can't afford that in our business. So I know Steve and I and a lot of the other local businesses here really try to strive for, treating our customers.
What they say, if somebody has a good experience, they'll tell two other people. And if they have a bad experience, they'll tell seven.
Yep.
So it's nice. Thank you, Patricia.
Yes.
And we love Patricia and it's good to know that Patricia loves us. Our next caller is Charlie. Charlie, where are you calling from?
Hi, guys. Down in Geneva.
Geneva.
Yeah. Say, my Thunderbird jumped and flew the coop.
Oh.
Yep, I've downloaded it, cleared it out, done everything. And it just won't come up.
Now, you've installed it and you don't see it anywhere. Is that what you're saying?
All I do when I bring it up is a blank screen with a toolbar, and it says waiting for the message to be filled from the mail server, and it's not being done.
Now that's one of a couple of other questions. That's a separate problem. Thunderbird is there; it's not making a connection.
Does Internet Explorer connect?
How would I know that?
Just click on.
Can you get to websites at the time that you're waiting for Thunderbird?
Do get to the website?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can go to the website. Yeah, just that little circle that's spinning. Yeah, I can go there.
No, I'm sorry. I'm confusing you, and I beg your pardon. When you are – Thunderbird itself comes up, but it doesn't connect to anything and doesn't bring you your mail, right?
Right.
At the time that you're waiting for Thunderbird to connect and bring you your mail, if you were to go to your web browser, can you get to a website?
Oh, yeah, I can go to... No, I didn't ever try that, but Firefox comes up. Great. Any other time.
Yeah, but if you try them at the... My question is this. Are you, in fact, really connected to the Internet at the time that you're...
Checking your mail.
How do you connect to the Internet?
I'm on Roadrunner.
Okay, then it's definitely connected. Now, when you set up Thunderbird...
Sorry, yeah.
When you set up Thunderbird... What it sounds like is happening is one of two things. Either there's a problem at the other end, or there's a mistake somewhere in your setup of Thunderbird. Now, it's usual that when you set up Thunderbird, it picks up the settings from the old version, but there may have been a glitch in that. So look through your original Thunderbird setup under the accounts.
Like the POP and the SMTP.
To make sure that it's set up correctly, one of the things that we find all the time is that people have put in a comma instead of a period in like the .com.
But nothing's been touched.
But that's what I'm saying. It may have been a glitch.
Oh, it could have done it itself.
It's what I'm saying.
Yep. Got that critter in there, eh?
Yep, and so you need to go and take a look at how it's connecting and where it's connecting and make sure that your username and your password and everything else are in there correctly before you try to go back online again.
It could also be a stuck email at the mail server, and yep. If you log right. into the webmail service of your provider, you might be able to delete that first message, and the rest of them will come in.
Or call the help desk and have them delete that top message for you, and then do it. That's equally likely, so you need to do both. And that'll tell you, well, it looks like we're done for another week. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. I want to thank everybody who called in, particularly Patricia for her unsolicited testimonial. We'll be at the website all week. Check out soundbites.org, and we will be back here next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and I don't know who will be in the... maybe Rob will be back.
No,
we never know what's going on.
Next week, too.
And this is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.